Well, greetings, friends. Good morning. Good morning from the afternoon of North Carolina. It's really nice to be with all of you. It's been about 10 years since I worshiped with Berkeley Friends. Probably some of you are still around from then. And I had the privilege of being the Quaker Heritage Day speaker. I will say that I would much rather be in Berkeley right now speaking with you than from my house in Greensboro, but so we have it. I'm glad to have this opportunity to join you in this way and realize that this allows us to have this opportunity together. So this morning, I want to address with you the question, what does Jesus have to say about empire? The parable of the talents, a book by Octavia Butler that maybe some of you have read or are familiar with, is the second in a series of dystopian books outlining a future in the United States, where she describes a future where there is devastating poverty, climate collapse, and widespread drug use and violence. People do not live to be very old. Many are killed in fires or while their homes are robbed for meager supplies. It's an alternative universe that may have seemed far more far-fetched when the book was published in 1998, but with the numbers of deaths surpassing 150,000 in the United States alone because of COVID, the rapidly falling GDP, the increased violence from federal agents against citizens in cities like Portland, and the very real possibility that come September 1, more than 20 million Americans are likely to face evictions from their homes. This alternative future doesn't seem all that far-fetched after all. Are we on the brink of our own dystopian story? In Butler's parable of the talents, there are essentially two communities that are being contrasted. The protagonist of the story is a young African-American woman named Lauren Oya Olimia, who has traveled by foot along highway to Northern California to establish a community she called Acorn. Acorn is a community of resistance that embodies the values of this newfound religion that Olima creates called Earthseed. And that's a lot of what the first book is about. On the other hand, there is another community, so to speak, and that's the United States. The religion of empire is represented by the president of the US, whose name was Andrew Steele Jarrett, and his followers. Now, Jarrett was a pastor who became president. He was the leader of a denomination called Christian America. Christian America was a fundamental, or is in the novel, a fundamentalist denomination that seeks to restore America's power on the world stage and is, I kid you not, uses the slogan, "Make America Great Again." She wrote this in 1998, which I'm still baffled by. But anyways, okay. Jarrett's Christianity is a religion of empire, a system of beliefs and practices that uses religious-sounding words and symbols to justify exploitive policies. In this not-so-alternate future, slavery reemerges, and Jarrett seeks to clean the U.S. of all non-Christian faiths, while people all over the country zone out using VR headsets to kind of escape everyday reality. The important part of this story and why I'm bringing it to you is that there are these two religions in this dystopian future, one that's rooted in this image of creation, this acorn community, the earth seed, which is built around compassion, healing, renouncing power, and resisting empire. The other, which is represented by Jarrett and Christian America, the denomination, is a religion of empire that uses the name of God to justify atrocities while offering power and prestige to only a select few. As I've been reading through this novel and living in the same world that you all are living in, I have been thinking a lot about what does Jesus have to say about empire? With so much of Christianity in our time easily used and swayed by this kind of religion of empire, does Jesus offer us any help, any kind of alternative, any response? And as Louise mentioned, I've been doing work on Revelation and reading Revelation as a text of resistance to empire. And so this is kind of an extension of that project. So we turn to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 4, which we just read together. We find the beginning of a response, I think, to what does Jesus have to say about empire in chapter 4. Remember that Jesus just renounced political power and other temptations from Satan earlier in 4. And then the text says, now filled with the power of the Spirit, he returns to Galilee, which was his home where he grew up, and he heads to the synagogue on the Sabbath. During this gathering, he goes up to the front, he's handed the scroll, it's a scroll of Isaiah, he goes down and he finds this passage from Isaiah, where he reads, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, and recovery of the sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And then he says, today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. These are the words that Jesus uses to announce his ministry, to proclaim the work of the Spirit of God on his life. The speech is short, and it is connected to his own Jewish prophetic tradition. He is, in a sense, saying, this right here that Isaiah was talking about is this moment. He is trying to leverage the power of Isaiah and this text to say that this tradition of resistance that Isaiah was talking about is the tradition of resistance that I stand in and am going to be building on. In the same way that when we, in the Poor People's Campaign, claim the power of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s words and his ideas, his critique of exploitative economics and racism, militarism, or when we draw on leaders like the civil rights leader John Lewis, who just passed away, what we're doing is we're drawing on a tradition to show that we stand within this community of resistance. What I like about Jesus' reading of this text from Isaiah is that it tells us who God is, who God prioritizes, and the overall theological work of Jesus. In a word, this is a summary of who Jesus believes God to be, one who cares about the poor, one who announces God's favor, one who releases the captives. And what he believes that the Spirit is anointing him to do. So this text in Isaiah quite literally becomes Jesus's mission. A number of years ago, I was puzzling over this text and wondering, when we read this text, I think generally as American Christians, it's very easy. We've been taught to spiritualize Jesus's teachings, when he's talking about kind of release from a spirit of anger and that sort of thing, and that's, I'm not to say that that doesn't happen, but we tend to kind of make it very internal and spiritual, and we don't read these things as more literal, more political. And so I wondered, was Jesus just like, kind of riffing off one of his favorite Bible verses, and then he's going to kind of go out and do his own thing for ministry? Or does he actually mean he's going to do these things? And, so that was my question. And like any good Bible nerd, I did a long Bible study and created a chart and, drew all over everything and connected the dots. And as I read through the Gospel of Luke, just with these few passages, in four as my main kind of lens or grid, you can imagine what I found. As it turns out, this is actually what Jesus does. He literally goes about proclaiming the good news to the poor, releasing the captives, announcing Jubilee in all these different ways. And you can read the rest of the Gospel of Luke with this in mind and see where he is doing these things. Sometimes very literal, very political, sometimes, you know, more symbolic, but it's all there. So this kind of leads me into the last part that I want to share with you, which is, so what could we kind of glean from this that might be ways that Jesus practiced resisting empire, or how he stood in opposition to empire? I've been sort of working on this, and I'm not going to give you the like 10 ideas I have, because there's a lot there. I'm just going to give you like three, okay? And you know, maybe eventually there'll be more, and it'll be longer, and you can find, we can, I'll send it to you in a blog post or something. But for now, so in other words, there are things here that I've missed and left out, and I would love to hear from you all how you think and see Jesus resisting empire. But I want to share three with you. So the first one is Jesus resisted empire with his body. Jesus resisted empire with his body. Consider that baby Jesus was born homeless and on the run because the king wanted to find him and kill him as a newborn baby. His very body was at the point of birth devalued by empire. Jesus lived in a body that would have been brown skinned. He was of Palestinian descent. His people were Jewish and were in that moment occupied by the Roman Empire. And prior to that, his people had been occupied by the Babylonian Empire, by the Assyrian Empire, by the Persian Empire. So these are people who knew what it was like to be enslaved, to be occupied by global powers. His body, full of that promise of God liberating people who looked like him, put his life in grave danger from the moment he was born. His birth may have been a miracle, but to remain alive was an act of resistance, not just for Jesus, but for his people, for his community. Consider then that those bodies that are devalued today, who just by the way they look are seen as a threat that needs to be neutralized, who empire wishes to kill and refuses to protect, those who are killed without any justice in their name. To understand that Jesus resisted empire with his body and was killed because of it is to see one of the main lessons that he sought to teach us. Those scapegoated by empire are not just precious in God's sight, they are, but they're not just that. They are the ones who God actually identifies with. Jesus's identification with the innocent victims of empire links together all those crushed by empire throughout time. So this surely is part of what it means then when Jesus says, release of the captives. The captives of systems that do not even see the certain bodies, certain people as worth living, as valuable. Another way I see Jesus resisting empire is by organizing the poor. Jesus organized poor people by announcing God's preferential option for the poor. In Luke, it says he is going to announce the good news to the poor. You could say he was a missionary to the poor, not to try to convert them or tell them their culture was wrong, but to announce God's favor and God's love, God being on their side and with them. Here in Luke, Jesus proclaims that his work is to announce this good news. He has a message. Friends would say he carries a concern, and that good news and that concern is directed at, for, and with the poor. Jesus organized a movement of the poor with his message. He worked the way any good teacher, rabbi, and community organizer works. He went about from town to town meeting people, teaching, telling stories, and eating with the poor, tax collectors, sex workers, fishermen, and more. He talked to people who have wealth and debates, and debated lawyers and religious figures, but he organized the poor with his ministry. He gave them new theological language and tools to understand a God who does not bow and concede to empire's luxuries, the way religious leaders in every age are tempted to do, but one who stands with those who are exploited and crushed. Jesus fed hungry people on the hillside with fish and loaves. He cast out demons that kept people homeless, hungry, and without community. He called the uneducated and the poor fishermen to be his co-organizers, his co-ministers, men of the people who were themselves poor. This band of people gathered in his name, repeated his teachings with one another, shared their resources, and as Acts 2 tells us of the early church, they shared what they had in common as a community of diverse individuals. Jesus brings the poor together as the new movement of God, a movement that still to this day gathers the poor, proclaims God's liberation and love for the downtrodden. Okay, so the last thing I want to share with you about Jesus resisting empire is that Jesus subverted distorted moral theology. As a rabbi, Jesus taught counter lessons and used storytelling to subvert the empire's distorted moral theology. He sought to wake people up to empire and its effects. Luke 4 calls this recovery of sight to the blind. Yes, there are instances of Jesus performing miracles, physical miracles of healing of sight and other other disabilities. But there are far more instances where Jesus performs the miracle of helping people wake up to the numbing effects and the lies of the distorted theology of empire. His parables are short stories that subvert the typical storytelling of the day, and even in our own time. Tales about how the strong and the rich stay on top, how they win. Tales that are used to keep people under control and some in power. Jesus's teachings and stories were far more subversive. They were about the powerless coming out on top. The first shall be last. They were about the ways in which God was on the side of the poor and the weak, like the prodigal, the Samaritan, the mustard seed. These are all people and images who were in one way or another to be devalued by empire or those who were in power. Jesus's stories are about how God shows favor on the disinherited. This is certainly part of what it means to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. So as we are faced with questions of what is empire today, how does it use distorted theology to justify its actions? And what does Jesus offer us in the way of thinking about practicing and resisting empire? I'm left with this text in Luke 4 as at least the starting point for helping me to see and to understand what Jesus understood himself to be about and what his ministry was. What about you? What are other ways that you see Jesus practicing resistance of empire in his ministry? Where are we being called and challenged to follow Jesus in these ways? Thank you, friends.